conceived this way, which can also help limit the risks.
Thanks for listening to Noise Filter, your public health podcast.
Be sure to subscribe to the Noise Filter podcast, follow us on social media, and leave us a review letting us know your favorite part of the show.
You can find me, Hope Pickerson, at hopepickerson.com.
And you can find me at Dr. Mark Allen Derry or at The Dr. Derry. That's D-R-D-E-R-Y.
To see and share our amazing animations and find out more information about us, the show, as well as links to our social media, go to noisefiltershow.com.
We are grateful to our sponsors, including Access Health Louisiana and the End the Epidemic Initiative, who are working to bring equitable health outcomes to everyone they serve. Hope, any last words?
Stay well out there, folks, and continue taking steps to keep yourself and your loved ones healthy. That includes exercise, a good diet, getting adequate sleep, and seeing your healthcare providers regularly.
And protect yourself and others by getting the COVID-19 vaccine and booster, wearing a mask, and social distancing wherever possible. Remember, health is a human right.
Are tuned in to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor the Portland Folk Music Society concert series continuing Saturday, January 21st with Canadian singer-songwriter David Francy. David Francy is a Scottish-born Canadian carpenter-turned-songwriter. The Folk Music series of concerts continues Saturday, January 21st at 7:30. In the Reedwood Friends Church on Southeast Steel Street in Portland. The concert series continues through May. Ticket information can be found at kboo.fm under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
Connect with your favorite community radio station on social media.
Our Facebook page is facebook.com/kboomradio.
And follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/kboo.
We also have a YouTube channel at youtube.com/kboo radio.
We also provide content to the free music archive.
An interactive library of high-quality legal audio downloads.
That's at freemusicarchive.org/curator/kboo.
You can find all of this and more on the KBOO website, kboo.fm.
Thanks for listening.
KBOO.
To you, the 9-to-5er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Labor Radio.
of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm Laura Wadlin, here with my co-host, Jamie Partridge. Hey, Jamie.
Hey, Laura.
Our topic this evening is Cinema Workers Organize. Our guests are Audra Sweetland and Jay Marks of United Cinema Workers. Audra and Jay work at the Living Room Theater on Southwest 10th Avenue, just up the street from Powell's Books. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us, Laura.
Let's start with your story. Jamie and I met you at a DSA Labor Mixer, a social event. The usual DSA crowd was just getting ready to play a game when this crowd of young people we had never met came into the room. And soon it became obvious that this group had not come to socialize, but was agitated about their workplace and had been told to go talk with DSA, the Democratic Socialists. The mixer turned into a speak out and strategy session. But before we tell the rest of the story, let's talk about the Living Room Theaters and what they say about themselves and their employees. Living Room Theaters touts itself as a sophisticated yet superbly comfortable environment that combines a European-style cafe and lounge with a relaxing place to see wonderful movies. And they tell job seekers, if you have an outgoing personality, a passion for customer service, and creating stellar guest experiences, we want to hear from you. Audra and Jay, what is real and what is unreal about these descriptions?
We do have a bar and restaurant, and we are a movie theater. Those things are correct. I guess I'm not sure what European-style lounge means. I looked it up before the interview and couldn't find anything, so I feel that that's a made-up statement. But the reality is we're run down a little bit. We're a mix between a corporate theater and an independent theater, and corporate doesn't put any money into our location, and it shows. Our keg lines haven't been changed out since we moved into the building in 2006. Our seats are old and ripped, and I would love to see some tender loving care for the facade of our building, because it's a nice place to come. It genuinely is. It's a comfortable place. The spirit among the employees is there. I think what they said about people who coming into work who have outgoing personalities is right. I just wish that corporate would have those same personalities.
Anything to add, Jay?
I agree with Audra on her point, where I just find that we definitely do have, you know, the outgoing personality. And I think that there's some as much passion for customer service as anyone could have, but it does create a very lively work environment. And I think that speaks true to the reality of the workplace. But there's definitely a lot of things that need to have money put into them. I mean, we have like the seats, but there's also a lot of maintenance that needs to be put into the kitchen itself, which I have been fighting for since I've started there.
Some health and safety things need to be addressed as well.
So tell us about your working conditions and how they've changed over time. What are the main issues that caused workers to want to organize?
Well, everyone at the theater was very close. I was the first person hired back after COVID, and so I've had the privilege of watching everybody in the group be hired after me and how they fit into the group. And our general manager did a really good job of finding good people, to the point where it helped us in the long run, because we were all friends outside of work, and that really strengthened our solidarity before we knew what that term meant. But we were a little too close, I think, with each other and with management, and it created an environment where that boundary could be crossed by both sides. And what changed is that corporate decided that that boundary was going to be instituted for the employees only now, starting now, and how they were going to mark that differentiation was by just firing one of the employees to prove a point that they could.
Yes. So I think from that firing, that left us all on this state of mind that, oh, I don't know if I'm going to be the next one. It left everyone on thin ice. And with the solidarity that we had unconsciously formed with each other previously, we had a step up in unionizing and coming together and talking to each other about what our fears were for our own job security. And so this was just a giant push to coming together, hearing each other, and working towards unionizing.
So you mentioned the firing of your beloved coworker, Freddie, and how that sparked a wave of anger throughout the workforce. What happened next, and what was the advice you got from experienced DSA union activists?
Well, to be honest, we were a little bit dead in the water immediately. Freddie got fired, and we banded together that night and spoke about our options and what we had really just seen on TV as far as what strikes mean and what a union means. And we didn't know what we were doing. And we found out about the DSA mixer that was going to happen. And through the DSA and the IWW and some other like local labor organizations, we've gotten some fantastic advice about what it means to be a union and how to do that efficiently and in a socialistic manner where everybody has a voice. It's not something we would have ever been able to pull off ourselves. I don't think I could have accurately defined the word union 2 weeks ago, and now I organize one. And I think that really just speaks to the kind of support that already exists in this community.
I think the DSA and the IWW really told us to slow down, think about this. And I think we definitely needed that because we're all very passionate people who we want answers, we want movement, we want to feel protected in our job. And I think that that was something that was kind of clouding our judgment at first. And so these organizations really helped us slow down and think about things a little bit more.
And teaching us about the legality of some of the things that we were doing was helpful as well, because there's so many different types of strikes that give you different protections. We went on a ULP strike, which allowed us to keep our jobs after the strike, but we would have been on economic strike and we probably all would have gotten fired without, and we would have not had a next step or next direction because we played that card immediately. So getting advice from experienced people was key.
So for our listeners who are unfamiliar, a ULP strike is an unfair labor practice strike, which means that the employer is being charged with breaking the National Labor Relations Act, which of course, in this case, they were interfering with your right to associate and conspire with each other.
Yes.
So the following Friday, after that Tuesday meeting, you went to the office of the CEO, Steve Herring, and the COO, Nick Cruz. And what happened? What happened next?
So before that, when we had initially met together to speak about the strike, we had included somebody who was not necessarily on our side and was not part of our, he was a manager who we thought would be amenable to our situation. It was a mistake that we made right off the bat. And he snitched immediately. And so I got pulled into work the next day and told not to speak about my working conditions at work or outside of work with my coworkers. And that was the grounds for the ULP strike. And as soon as that happened, we got together, we wrote up a list of needs from our workplace of what we'd be needing wage-wise and some other benefits and like a more clear outline for HR personnel. And we delivered that itinerary for a meeting to our bosses on Thursday morning at 9 a.m. and said, we'll be back here tomorrow at 9 a.m. ready to have a discussion about these topics. We came in full force. There were eight of us at the time. Some people have quit since then, but we were prepared to meet. We were ready to negotiate, and they were not even there. So when they did get there a few hours later, we were told they do not recognize us as a group and that they refused to do that and that we could sit there for as long as we'd like and nothing would change. So we did sit there for as long as we'd like. We were there for about 8 hours and that was the first day of our ULP strike.
Yeah, so then after that, we took to the streets and started picketing outside of the theater, and that went on for about 4 days.
Until Tuesday.
And that's when we had our large media event with company from the DSA, the IWW, and there was the nurses. There was a nurses union there as well.
A lot of independent labor organizations in the area came up to show support, as well as community. We had people coming off the street who were customers of Living Room Theaters who picked up picket signs and joined us for 3 or 4 hours. They were out there with us.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
Well, the theater closed for 2 days and said on their Facebook page, our theater will be closed Wednesday, January 11th and Thursday, January 12th to give our staff a much needed break. So what did you do then?
So I think this was an opportunity for us to come back together after the strike and talk about furthering our unionizing movements and taking things more towards a little outside of the public eye. You know, we got some formal documents together, had further discussions about what we agree on, and just started focusing on the ins and outs within our fellow co-workers.
We took that time to sign union cards and file an official petition with the National Labor Board for our own independent union. So the first 2 days off were a blessing in disguise. They have also, that Wednesday, Thursday off is for the foreseeable future. They've taken away our last set, so we're closing 3 hours early than we, or 3 hours earlier than we normally do. At this point, this seems to be their major union busting tactic, is to cut the hours of the business so they can cut the hours of the employees, in kind of a retaliatory effort, it seems. You know, we'll see how that impacts us moving forward and how long they can stick with that now that they do have the staff.
You've just tuned in. This is KBOO Portland Labor Radio. We've been listening to Audra Sweetland and Jay Marks of the United Cinema Workers, workers at the Living Room Theater that have been on strike and are unionizing here in Portland. And if you like this program and other KBOO programs, we are community supported, non-corporate. Please contribute. Go to our website at kboo.fm. Wow, so you have a union recognition election coming up, hopefully, in February. You filed cards, and the employer has cut back on your hours in a significant way by shutting down the theater 2 days a week and cutting the hours in the evenings. So what else has the employer done to discourage unionizing?
To be quite honest, that has been their main tactic. I know personally, I have had multiple small conversations from different managers telling me like, oh, little things that I'm doing wrong. I've gotten a verbal warning since I've been back. And I think that pinpointing employees is going to be their main thing to re-input that fear of job security. Luckily for us, though, we are very hard people to manipulate, and so it's not working very well.
The only other thing they've done is ask our coworker who is sympathetic to our cause but not necessarily a part of our strike to spy on us. Mm-hmm. And say, you know, if they start talking about union activity, let me know what they say, because they can't be doing that at work, which is wrong and of course illegal as well.
Yes.
So we're not foolish enough in the first place to discuss our private plans at work where they could be overheard. But if we were, you know, just trying to scout out information about any kind of activity that we could be doing and trying to get our next step as quickly as possible, which I think shows that they're scared of us. If they don't know what we're doing or where we're coming from, then they are going to have a harder time trying to stop us.
Sounds like you are steeled to their efforts to union bust you. But tell us about how you and your coworkers have resisted those tactics.
I think it's communication to just keep to ourselves. It's been really drilled into us from each other that we need to keep this kind of conversation outside of the workplace. We need to record any conversations that we have with management and keep track of the dialogue between us to be very careful about things.
Communication is really key as a group as well, making sure that everyone has a space where they feel comfortable checking in and letting people know where their head is at and if any worries, and where they won't feel discouraged or you know, made to feel bad about if they have second thoughts about whatever's going on. It's also important to make sure people know what corporate is going to try and do before they do it. The union busting, you know, playbook that employers use has not changed since the 1900s. We know what they're going to do. There's no surprises here. And as long as we've inculcated ourselves to those surprises, then when things arise, we won't be caught unprepared and we'll be okay.
How did you find out about the playbook?
Well, Jamie, it was gifted to me by a friend at a DSA mixer. The DSA specifically has been very helpful in providing us with like labor notes and just different literature that helps
pinpointing labor laws as well.
Jamie, you have been very helpful in sending me those things as well. Thank you.
You're entirely welcome. And it is fortunate that the playbook hasn't changed. However, I understand they do have a union avoidance law firm that's advising them, and I'm sure they have some more tricks up their sleeve. So what has been the role of community support you've told us some of it, in giving folks confidence to push back on these management tactics?
Well, like I said, people from the community off the street came to join our picket line, which was such a great show of support. We also, as part of the guidelines around our ULP strike, we were not asking people to boycott the business or even to take their business elsewhere. But we had a lot of people voluntarily say, I'm not going to go inside. I never cross a picket line. I support what you guys are doing. We had people go in and get refunds. We had people leaving reviews on social media, because that's really where it hits the company. We also had some great media outreach through Coin6, the Willamette Weekly, the Mercury, people who are sympathetic to our position. And I feel like those articles have really helped get the community involved as well, because currently our employer is deleting negative reviews and social media comments due to this strike. But they're very real. The community is upset. When you tout yourself as an independent business in the heart of downtown Portland and people choose to support you based on that, they're going to choose not to support you if you treat your employees without respect. And that's just the way it goes.
So how do you hope to win a first contract? And what do you expect Living Room Theater Management will do?
We're going to try to take it with just keeping our people informed and sticking with the IWW.
So right now we're in limbo with the National Labor Relations Board. We're waiting for our employer's statement of position. We've provided them with paperwork to be voluntarily recognized, which never happens, but a girl can hope. And then we'll be able to make it to election, at which point we can start negotiating our contract. And we have some, things we're willing to compromise on. We have some hard lines. Personally, I'm very excited to get into those negotiations because I think it'll be a learning experience for me. And I feel that we're very well prepared and have more than the right to ask for what we're asking for. And so contract negotiation, I think personally the management in the building is supportive of us and won't try and, needle nose into our contract and make things difficult for us. I'm curious to see how corporate will handle our contract moving forward. I know they're not going to be happy about it. They've made that very clear. But I think just, again, preparing ourselves and knowing what things are going to try and break and having that information beforehand so that we can catch them on it immediately is what's important.
That's great. I wanted to just highlight that getting support and advice from the IWW, the Industrial Workers of the World, is so important in this situation, I think, because it's similar to the Burgerville situation, that they really plowed some new ground by using direct action, strikes and various kinds of actions prior to their first contract. They did community pickets and all kinds of different, including a boycott. Took them 3 years to get their first contract, but it's a very good contract. And, it was in a similar industry, which is, high turnover, young people. I'm excited that you have that, that they have your back.
Yeah, in fact, the United Cinema Workers Organizing reminds us of the wave of Starbucks Workers Organizing, which has involved 16 shops in Portland since last January, and the wave of New Seasons workers unionizing in 7 local shops in the past 6 months. And recently, the Restaurant Workers of Portland in 2 new shops. The similarity with Starbucks, New Seasons, restaurant workers, and cinema workers is that the workers tend to be young, self-organizing, and independent. Is there a connection between Starbucks organizing, New Seasons organizing, restaurant workers, and cinema workers that you have found?
Yeah. So I think in the recent years, there has been an extreme highlighted note of how employers treat their employees. And when unionizing was first founded in the early 1900s, there was a firm establishment of these laws and a firm fight for these laws. And after the laws were established, enforced, put into place, people kind of forgot about them. They forgot about their rights. And so employers use that as a tactic to dominate their employees and tell them that, or not necessarily tell them, but discourage them from unionizing. And therefore, unions lost power for a long time, or they have fallen off in a way where they could have been pushed forward. And so what I think we're seeing now is after COVID and after all of these political movements that have been apparent in the past 4 years, we see how people have a voice and that we can come together and advocate for ourselves. And so I think with New Seasons, Starbucks, Burgerville, restaurants, we are seeing these independent organizations remember that they have power and that they have a voice. And I anticipate that we're going to be seeing much more of this. I mean, after seeing Burgerville, that's what gave us a large confidence to do what we're doing now. And so it's just going to be even greater after this.
Companies like to take the position on unions that the fight is over. It was won. You guys got what you wanted. There are laws now.
Yes.
And that's not accurate in any way, shape, or form. And COVID recently really highlighted that, I think, for a lot of people, because we watched companies be understaffed and employees be overworked. And that was just status quo. And, you know, people were rising up for essential workers, but then companies made record profits that year, proving that they had the funds at the time to hire extra people. And we didn't need to have that whole, you know, terrible situation that happened with essential workers. And I think that coming out of that, and companies are still making record profits and still beating it every year to the disadvantage of the people who work for them, we're going to see a second rise in unionizing. And I think, you know, something that the DSA has talked about a lot, and something that I think is accurate, is that unionizing started with the basis of socialism, and that was taken out during the Red Scare. And unions became very corporate and very capitalistic by nature, and it fell apart a little bit. Unions were not as strong as they used to be when they were all connected. And now, you know, socialism and communism, those aren't scary words anymore. And we can inculcate those ideas into unionizing and help everyone be stronger because of it.
Great.
Hell yeah.
Audra and Jay, how can our listeners support your efforts going forward and keep informed? And do you have a GoFundMe or a strike fund?
Yes. So created a GoFundMe. It called the United Cinema Workers Strike Fund.
Mm-hmm.
And in the description, it tells our story and it talks about what we're going to do with the strike fund, either for future strikes or for possible legal fees as well. And how, I mean, we're not really going to be even benefiting much from this. It's just a security blanket.
We're a new union and we don't have a lot of capital. The whole point of this is trying to make higher wages, and we're very poor, and we're trying to keep you know, ourselves afloat with if we have to go on strike again. Our employer has continuously committed ULPs since this has started, and we don't know what the future looks like for us, and we have to be careful, and we have to support ourselves in the meantime. And having community resources and outreach and having strike funds and legal fee representation is really, really something we're going to need in the future moving forward. Another way that the community can help, if you know, maybe you can't donate necessarily, is leaving reviews on any platform you find for Living Room Theaters, because our corporate office has a position that's just customer outreach. Their whole job, 9 to 5, is combing through reviews and emails and phone calls from customers. And so if we can mobilize people to show their discomfort with the situation happening behind the scenes with employees, it will motivate them to get the situation resolved as quickly as possible, which is by voluntarily recognizing our union and negotiating our contract with us.
Great. So GoFundMe, United Cinema Workers Strike Fund. And is there a Facebook page or another source of information?
No,
we don't have a media yet. Those are part of our next steps. Whole process started about 2 weeks ago, so we're trying to play catch up here.
You're doing great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're trying.
Well, that wraps it up for this episode of Labor Radio this Monday and every Monday at 6 p.m. on 90.7 FM KBOO. We're talking with Audra Sweetland and Jay Marks of United Cinema Workers. I'm Jamie Partridge. Here is my co-host, Laura Wadland. Stay tuned for Prison Pipeline.
Medea Benjamin, I hope you listen to Community Radio, KBOO 90.7.
This is KBOO, Portland.
Baby, you understand me now.